There we go, Bucky's Auto Service Centers. It's been a clunky week for me when it comes to promoting Bucky's Auto Service Centers.
Why is that, John?
Well, I kind of went down this weird thing where he's talking about the Bucky's Auto Service Centers and people listening to the show and then sitting at Bucky's. Remember that one went far?
Yeah.
And then I did the thing where you keel, like the keel thing and your keel and that and Bucky's and Bucky's not does work on sailboats. I just kind of bring it in straight in today.
Right? Woohoo.
Bucky's Auto Service Centers with 16 locations. They've been around for almost 50 years.
There you go.
Right? And in dog's life, that would be what?
140.
Wait, that's seven times. Dive it in.
Oh, darn. Now you screwed it up again.
Oh, why am I having you do math on the air? Hey, don't forget, at 11 o'clock, we're going to be playing the Know-It-All Quiz. You get a chance to get two tickets to Shenmue.
Producer's not paying attention.
I know. Performing Arts, Ebony McCall Hall, for 10 shows only in March and April. Shenmue. Don't, you know, when you hand it to me, then the last thing he says as he walks away, it's very important. They want you to make sure you pronounce it right.
Pronounce it right,
don't
yes.
give it to me.
Yeah.
She wish. You know, I have a condition. Recognized. Okay, that's all done there. Here we go. Uber discloses that 3,000 reports of sexual assault in the U.S. rides last year in the long-awaited safety report. They break it all down for you. You can take a look at it if you'd like. And Gary Horker actually looked at the report.
Oh, and did some local take on it.
Did our work for us.
Okay. Late today, when Uber revealed 3,000 sexual assaults were reported in rides across the country last year, some local Uber drivers found the number startling. This number, did that surprise you? 3,000 assaults?
Yeah, this is too much.
Herman Bolanos is a full-time, long-time Seattle Uber driver with an elite professional rating.
Do you have to be extra careful when there's women in the car?
Yes, yes.
Herman understands the new sensitivity between rideshare drivers and riders after Uber revealed last year they had 235 reports of rape, 280 reports of attempted rape, more than 1,500 reports of groping, and 970 reports of unwanted kissing.
It violated me.
Seattle victims of rideshare rapes told their stories to Cairo 7's Amy Clancy 4 years ago when it was a new and underexposed crime. She profiled the victim of one rideshare driver who was charged with attempted rape. He told investigators at least once a month, female customers had sex with him.
Your Honor, number 29 on our arraignment calendar is Ghassan A. Shakir.
Ghassan Shakir, who was fired from both Uber and Lyft, was charged with sexually assaulting several women from Bellevue to SeaTac.
There are allegations that this individual potentially raped several individuals.
Herman's clean rideshare operator background check is now one of 50,000 to be double-checked by a new program set up by the King County Council.
I have two years and a half doing this job, mm-hmm. and I never have any kind of this problem.
Mm. Okay. Okay. A lot of people listen to our show are Uber drivers, Tom, as we have demonstrated.
Yeah, yes, and Lyft drivers as well.
Yes, true.
So the significance of this is, first off, this is Uber self-reporting.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, they are trying to be as transparent as possible because they've gotten a lot of bad press about this. I know you're going to come up with the counter side, which I appreciate too. But one of the things, because of the attention of some of these higher profile rapes locally here, as well as around the country, they've increased their screening and background checks for their drivers. So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all this negative attention, I suppose, it's made the rideshare companies safer, we can only presume. They said in the last 2 years, when they put in this new screening, they've weeded out more than 1 million prospective drivers. A million people applied and were rejected because of their background. So that's the kind of stuff that they're trying to show they're getting ahead of mm-hmm. the curve rather than behind it. The other thing important to keep in mind, they say, is that the rate of assault is the same for driver and passenger.
Mm-hmm.
The rate. Now, there are a lot more passengers, obviously, than drivers. But in terms of the rate, the percentage, drivers are attacked by passengers.
Yeah.
Much like the drivers could be attacking the passengers back and forth. So anyway, those are some of the major sort of piece of information. Uber, since their inception, and Lyft as well, any of the rideshares, they've been very careful about hoarding their own internal information. And because of the bad press, they're kind of now going on a transparency campaign, and this is the result of it. And the hope is that now that they've established this, we can lessen that number. And then one final thing that sex crime units suggest is that usually sexual assaults and rapes are underreported or undercounted because they're relying on the victim to report. So it might be a bigger problem, but it's no different than probably any other situation because sexual assault is a problem in the society.
Give the other number that's buried at the bottom of the story.
Uber points out that 99.9%, now that's their number, 99.9% of all rides are fine.
There you go. There's the headline.
Yes. You think that's the headline?
Yeah, that's the headline.
Okay. I don't think it's a headline because I think most of us assume that. It never occurs to me when I get in one, although I'm not the typical vulnerable victim profile, but I think that we need to be kind of alert to the fact that these things can happen. So I think it's
the headline
good
is, look how safe it is to drive in to ride in an Uber.
No, even Uber drivers, John, I don't think so. It is safe, but it's like an airplane crash. It's safer than driving. But the thing is, when you know that something in that plane could have been fixed.
0.0002 is what the number works out to be. When you take the number of incidents, and of the 3,000, how many of those were passenger on driver complaints where the passenger goes, we don't know. They put it all under.
But they did say it's the same rate. Okay. So if there's, I would guess there's maybe one driver to every, 100, passengers or 1,000 passengers?
You got a 1 in 50,000 chance. That's what it works out to be. 1 in 50,000 chance that someone's going to try to kiss you, touch you, rape you, kill you.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think that at the time, we don't think of that. When these ride shares first came about, it's, oh my God, this is unbelievable. It's astonishing, even to an Uber driver, that there were literally 235 reported rapes last year alone. And then thousands of more assaults. People died from car accidents, 107 fatalities. I mean, it's just a sort of caution. Yeah, you think about it. Well, that makes sense. We live in a society that has sexual assault happening all the time. It makes sense it would happen in cars. But they say people in cars are especially vulnerable, both drivers and passengers.
Chance of being in a car accident, 1 in 77.
Is that right? That high?
That's what it says. Considering the death of the United States, the year totaled slightly 2.6 million individuals. Americans driving odds, results of injury, sustaining in an automobile crash, injured, not killed, right? Okay, this includes pedestrians, bicyclists, motorcyclists, and car crashes, comes out 1 in 77.
Boy, that's pretty high. Every time we have a 1 in 77 chance
headline.
Of getting hit.
Yeah, being hurt. Okay, let's see. Michael Bloomberg says he's not trying to take Joe Biden's job. Although Joe Biden wants the same job.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
Two quarterbacks trying out for a team.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not trying to take his job. I just want to be the quarterback. Oh, you want to be the quarterback too? I guess I'm trying to take your job from you.
The reason that's significant is because he said he didn't want to get in if Joe Biden was still in, a couple, 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And now what's changed?
He's getting a lot of press. Normally when these guys make these announcements that they're running, then people go, okay. It's, you get the firework effect. And then it moves on. But things have sort of slowed down. There's not much going on. So Bloomberg continues to get some air. And here he is on with CBS.
I looked at our national government getting worse, the way we're behaving overseas and domestically, led by our president. I said back in 2016, he is the wrong person for the job. He doesn't have the temperament or the ethics, the intellect to do the job. And I watched and I said, we just can't have another 4 years of this. And then I watched all the candidates, and I just thought to myself, Donald Trump would eat him up.
You think all the candidates who are running today, he would eat them up?
Let me rephrase it. I think that I would do the best job of competing with him and beating him.
No, what you said was he would eat them up. And then Gail said, so he would eat them up?
Let me rephrase realized, that.
Hold on. Then he goes on, he talks about stop and frisk, one candidate of color dropping out, too many old white candidates, and your old friendship with Joe Biden. Which ones of those do you like? You care about any of those in particular? What's your favorite one, Jacob?
Well, we've talked about Joe Biden, so maybe we should hear from him on that one. But the stop and frisk is getting a lot of headlines. The candidates of color stuff is also big.
Okay.
Some people are suspicious of the timing of your apologies.
Well, you the were mark talking. Of a intelligent, competent person is when they make a mistake, they have the guts to stand up and say, I made a mistake, I'm sorry.
We don't question your belief that you made a mistake. I think the question is the timing that you realize you made the mistake.
Well, nobody asked me about it until I started running for president.
Okay.
So come on.
Yeah, and what's bunk about that is that he recently reiterated his support for stop and frisk
right.
before he announced it was just something. So I
it was
I
a
think
press that conference that he did in 2013, just before he left office, saying, look at this. The 2,135 people were murdered in New York City in 1990. It has come all the way down. Stop and frisk works.
I thought he even more recently reiterated his support.
Oh, I think he did, too. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The last year. So.
But that doesn't play well.
So,
even though, here's the interesting thing. Most of the people that were victims of the crime were black or Hispanic, the majority of it. So they would stop and frisk and find out, you know, to stop and frisk. They actually stopped and frisked below the percentage that they should have. Since 95% in certain neighborhoods, the crime was being committed by a black male, 17, 18, 19 years old. They only stopped 88%. So some people say you should have stopped more.
Well, but you shouldn't stop anybody if they're not doing anything wrong. That's the problem. And so
That was the thing. And that's why they said, so when you look at the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure, what's the reason you have to have cause?
Yeah.
So the cops would stop. But they did reduce the crime.
Yes.
Yes.
But, and my point now is that even if we don't really believe him, if he is on board with not supporting stop and frisk anymore, it's much like I think the evangelicals and the Republicans have decided. Trump was a strong, you know, in favor of abortion rights, and then he declared, okay, no, I'm opposed to it, and I'll do everything I can to stop it in its track and name judges. People say, okay, as long as that's your stance, I'll support you.
Yeah.
At this point, I think Democrats are more desperate, or still desperate, to knock off Trump, and if we come around, the Democrats come around to the belief that the only guy who can do it is a fellow billionaire who can call Trump, you know, on Trump's terms, you know, I think most Democrats would be willing to put up with the fact that he's a billionaire and
that's a terrible billionaire. Candidate color dropping out.
The next debate is December, and Cory Booker said that it could possibly be on that debate stage, no one of color. There would be more billionaires in the race than black people. Is that a problem to you?
Cory Booker endorsed me a number of times, and I endorsed Cory Booker a number of times. He's very well spoken. He's got some good ideas. It would be better the more diverse any group is, but the public is out there picking and choosing and narrowing down this field. The truth of the matter is you had a lot of diversity in the candidates, some of whom were very competent. Why they aren't there as you narrowed it down, you have to talk to other people who are experts. I don't know.
Go to the experts. I'll tell you what happened. They didn't like him.
Yes,
that's what happened.
That's
so that's it. But Cory Booker, should we do affirmative action so that we have one guy up there? So we'll drop. I'll tell you what we'll do. You have to get a certain percentage of polling, and then you also have to get a certain percentage of gifts or donations given by what $30 level, small levels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's change that and do affirmative action on this. So we'll lower it down from 4% on the poll. Because you're black, you come in at 2%, and then you also don't have to get as many donations. Would Cory Booker be happy with that?
That's the danger of what Cory Booker's proposing. What I would like to point out to Cory Booker is Kamala Harris had qualified for that December debate.
Yeah.
She withdrew.
Ah.
She wasn't getting enough money that she expected to be able to run
ran
a
out of gas.
Campaign. But the idea here is that it's not like, oh, the debate doesn't have any representation, any minority representation. It's because, well, the one who had qualified decided in the long run it wasn't going to work out.
Mm-hmm. One last cut from Michael Bloomberg. Are there too many old white candidates? That is a problem.
Part of the conversation is, here we go, another old white gentlemen, isn't it time for change? Isn't it time for something new?
Maybe, but lots of people can enter. There was no reason, if you wanted to enter and run for president of the United States, you could have done that. But don't complain to me that you're not in the race. It was up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought there was a lot of diversity in the group of Democratic aspirants. Entry is not a barrier.
So you're saying if you want diversity, then get in.
That is exactly a good way to phrase it. Thank you very much.
You do have diversity. You got an old Bernie Sanders is an old socialist, right? Who honeymooned in Russia.
There's more than just race to determine diversity.
Oh, is there a diversity of ideas? Oh, imagine that.
Precisely.
Wow.
Also, it doesn't help the Kamala Harris and Cory Booker candidates when you have the most popular candidate among African Americans not being African American, but an old white guy, Joe Biden.
That's right.
I mean, that's the maybe an oddity in this race, but that's the truth.
Good segue, Tom.
One of the other things you said in September was that Joe Biden is a friend. Did you talk to Joe Biden ahead of time to say I'm getting in?
No, I did not.
Do you still consider him a friend?
Yeah, sure. Why would he not be?
Hey, why not?
I don't know. I'm thinking with friends like you, who needs enemies?
You are friendly with other great TV presenters in the morning.
Yes.
And you're all competing for the same get.
But I'm not trying to take their job.
Well, I'm not trying to take his job either. He doesn't have the job of President of the United States, and neither do I. At the moment, the person that has it is Donald Trump. I'm trying to take away the job from Donald Trump.
It's your friend doesn't have a right to be president. If you want to be president too, I don't care. You got friends can run against each other. I think Bloomberg's right on that score.
Well, he is trying to take the job. So what he will eventually start doing, because if you follow the logic of the question, he will have to start to go after his friend Joe Biden, and he will have to start to say things about Joe Biden.
I know.
And it's going to have to become personal. And then it's like, wait, I thought you guys were friends.
Yes. Ted Cruz and Donald Trump hated each other and said terrible things about each other, even Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
And they come around. That's the world of politics. I think everyone understands that.
Let's see. There's bad news for Jacob. Apparently, half of Seattle's bike share rental bikes are inoperable. In late summer maintenance slump, the city audit says there's a certain percentage they need to have functioning.
Yes. Yeah. So the trick here, though, is that this is looking back. They now claim that they're back up and running. Mm-hmm. But 51%... were not in September, were not rentable. 63% of Limes and 35% of Jumps. Now, they explain why that was. High Labor Day usage, low staffing due to vacations, backlogs in its Ballard warehouse where there was a fire. So there are complications about that. But, yeah, they have to maintain a certain level of operability. And the latest study just came out and said, okay, so they were under. The best news about this is they are being docked more properly or parked more properly. It was something like 12 to 17% of them were not, and now it's down to 6%. They still are 5%. They need to get down to 3% to satisfy.
So why does the government need why have they established a benchmark as to how many of these bikes need to be operative?
Because it's the safety of everybody.
Oh, I understand. Right. Okay. But the bike is inoperative and you're riding the bike and the front wheel flies off.
Right. Not good.
Not good. So is the city now responsible for...
I don't afford the
Who takes
injuries?
The liability
I think
of it?
I think the companies, the bike companies must
right.
have the
liability. But why the city says 50, you have to have a certain percent functioning?
Well, because you don't want... If you're going to have 5,000 bikes out there and half of them don't work, that's just clutter. That's litter. You know, if they're not working, you can't even use them.
Whether they're sitting there functioning or sitting there ready to be functioned, they are still clutter, correct?
Well, no, if they're being used, and that's the idea. We have cars. 90% of us, 90% of the time our car exists, it's not being driven. It's just being parked. So it's the accessibility. And they say ridership is at a peak. Never been higher, John. You don't
In this weather?
That. Yeah, well, no, I mean, through September.
Oh, yeah.
The last study.
Good. Come back, we'll tell you how you can be charming effortlessly.
John wrote this segment.
Has something to do with your eyebrows. And then another story I found while sitting on the toilet yesterday, I sent to Jacob, that if you want to tap into your oxytocin, which is the love hormone, you need to get yourself some water and two other things.
I was telling John, the theme of this segment is basically things John does already that are getting good press.
Idea how Andrew's feeling. The bump music comes in like this. 10:33 Cairo Radio.
Hard charging Fridays.
You know it, Tom. The Eagle poop today, Andrew?
No.
Jacob, did you get paid today?
I don't know the answer, but Andrew is pretty confident.
What does that say about the rest of us? We have no idea we get paid.
Hey, listen, you were pooping all week. You don't need to poop today.
What am I supposed to promote?
Shen Yun?
All right, you did that. Oh, no, I'm not doing that. Okay, let's talk. I don't want to screw it up.
Screw you. You do it then.
You read it. Go ahead.
You want me to?
Yeah, what's coming up, Tom?
We got a know-it-all quiz today. Hey, Friday. Have you written it yet, John?
Yes.
So don't forget, in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to play the know-it-all quiz.
Yes.
Today, someone's going to win two tickets to Shen Yun Performing Arts, returning to Macaw Hall for 10 shows in March and April. So I got a big... Spring, you could give this away as a Christmas present.
Boom!
April, yeah. Yes.
Thank you, G. Scott. All right, there are tricks to making yourself effortlessly charming. And this story came out.
Go on.
A couple of, well, BBC had it. I sent over to Jacob, and then he's like, that story's like three months old or something. I said, who cares? We haven't talked about it.
That's
so
right.
It's news to us.
I agree, John.
All right, good. So they walk you through the things that you're supposed to do, especially when you meet somebody for the first time. You're going to be effortlessly charming. And they do warn you right away. When you do meet someone, first impression, within about a tenth of a second, The person is immediately judging you. Bang! They have stamped you with an impression. But the good news is you can reverse that impression, and they actually sort of, they erase it and begin anew.
That's right. So most of us can't help our physical appearance, at least, what Mother Nature gave us, what God gave us. So the idea is, how do you overcome that if you're not instantly, good looking like a George Clooney? And one of the things they say is, first off, put on a happy face.
Yes.
That people like, if you just put a smile on your face, even if you're not feeling it, if you smile, people are going to think you're more trustworthy, they're warmer and sociable. I think most of us wouldn't be surprised about that.
And I'm just going to say, because I know you love pop culture stuff.
Yeah.
I saw a piece from a guy saying, why is it that Emilia Clarke is so unbelievably appealing as a person?
Yeah.
He then sat down and watched hours and hours of her being interviewed. And he said the first thing that she does is a gigantic beaming smile. And she's constantly doing it. She is constantly flashing it. And he goes, the other thing about it is, it seems genuine. If you begin the smile and just sort of fill it in with a feeling or a thought that I'm feeling good, then the smile reveals itself. It sort of evolves like a flower into a legitimate smile, not some fake thing that somebody put on.
That's right. And one of the problems is that we learn to fake authenticity or fake sincerity. And that's what it gets. That's what is going to be valuable of this. But basically, the idea is if you smile, if you look happy, if you seem interested in other people and all that, channel your charm. You have the better social skills. You're more likely to be successful. But that's all kind of just general stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you first hinted at yesterday, John. There are three physical things they say you can do. And one we mentioned is the smile. Mm-hmm. Another is an eyebrow flash.
That's right. That's the other one Emilia Clarke does well.
Is that right?
I watched a bunch
Which
of her interviews.
Her eyebrows go up as if she's happily surprised.
Throw the smile in there, Tom, and I'll jump all over you.
And then, the third one is, you got to have all three, John.
All right.
A slight head tilt.
Oh.
Now, what do you think that means? It's like, if you're really interested, you are so moved by what that person's saying that you actually cock your head a bit to kind of, can I really take all this in? So, yes, that's right. You look like a moron. So they're physically different. And then they say the reason people like you, anybody who's lived, a couple decades knows this for sure. If you're interested in somebody else, they find you interesting you're interested in them, right? And they say, if you ask follow-up questions, if you really listen, they said smart people really know. They listen to somebody, even if they don't like the person or disagree with the person.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen, you can find some kind of a similarity with them. But the idea is, if you are intent and you're bored to tears, but you want to look like you're interested, they say, focus on the different colors in their irises. In other words, get at that eye level where you can really look somebody in the eye. You may be off in La La Land, but if you're looking at their eyeballs, then they think you're really intrigued by that. So in some ways, we're teaching people how to fake it till you make it, I guess, and that's one of the receptions.
Well, the word is charming. It's not authentic.
Exactly.
Right? There's just you want to be charming, you can do this. Because the charming is always in the eye of the person being charmed.
Yeah.
Whether you are authentic or not, if you're good at it, then the person is charmed. And however you got to that final sort of destination of the person being charmed, is it wrong that you included these things, that you consciously said, oh, my eyebrows should go up at this point? You do that. What is your intent at the end? In that book, Persuasion, I don't know if I told you, I read it.
Yeah.
The guy says, listen, every once in a while through the book, he says, don't use any of these, what you might refer to as tricks, to manipulate people in order to deceive people.
Yeah, you shouldn't, but we do, because it's to our advantage. That reminds me, there's a great line in Sondheim's Into the Woods where there's a Prince Charming, of course, and he's suggesting they do something improper or immoral, and he says, hey, listen, I was raised to be charming, not moral.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, it worked.
I told Charlie, my daughter's working over at Nordstrom part-time at Christmas. I said, Chuck, let me tell you what you need to do. When people come, she's in the pop-up store. Smart.
Yeah, yeah.
Nordstrom does this thing. They said, we believe these 50 products will be the most popular, so you can go right there and do all your shopping in one little spot. So Chuck's in there.
Uh-huh.
I said, how's it going? I watched her talk to somebody. If you need any help, just let me know.
Yeah.
I said, that's terrible.
Yeah.
What you want to say is you walk up to somebody and said, my God, I love those shoes. Where did you get those?
Yep.
And the person's like, these?
Yeah.
Oh, I got these. They are so cute. I said, just walk up and find something and just fawn all over it. She goes, Dad, it's hard. There are people that walk in there like they have just crawled out from underneath the bridge.
Yeah.
And so the other day, someone came in there and I said, oh, my God, I love that scarf. And the person goes, oh, thanks. So then she turns around to this other person who walks up to her, and she has a scarf on as well. So Chuck goes, I love your scarf, too. And then starts to realize, oh, my God, it's all falling apart.
Yeah,
but the idea of starting the idea compliment them, then so then there's a reciprocation. The person feels somewhat connected.
They give an example. You get in an elevator, and somebody just seems to be beaming. Said, wow, looks like you're having a good day. And then he tells you, yeah, I just aced my exam.
Yeah.
And you get this conversation, and they feel like they're going to give
you their life savings. We did a story a couple of months ago that conversations with strangers actually do more for your dopamine and serotonin release than a conversation with somebody you know.
That's right. And the thing, the irony of that is that we all fear that. We dread that. You get on the subway and say, nobody wants to talk to anybody.
I love it.
Yeah, I bet you do. It's the recipient.
Not on the subway.
Well, they just talk to, that's what they did this experiment. People sit on the subway, they act like they don't know each other. They just sort of sit down, they don't talk. But if you go up and sit down next to somebody and start talking to them, it ends up, you know, even if you don't feel like
on a New York subway, if somebody turned to you, you'd immediately assume something's wrong. Because no one talks to anybody.
But you say, I really like your scarf, John. One other thing, and this you mentioned yesterday too. Watch their body, mirror their body language. Yeah. So that feels a little creepy.
That is creepy. I've done it.
Yeah. Where if they're kind of moved to the left and you sort of move to the left, and they say, you can actually use this in reverse. You can test it. How interested is that person in me? So I'm going to go lean on my left shoulder. Yeah. And let's see. And if they do it, then they're really into you and you can proceed accordingly.
When the person is finally charmed by you, then that's where you can move in for the kill.
Yeah, or the sale, preferably.
Oh, the sale. And don't be afraid to touch somebody, too.
No, I don't think that's in this.
I had this waiter that was constantly touching me when I was in Mexico. And it was like his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a good...
Cerveza, por favor, por favor. I'm like, he's got his hand on my back. I'm like, sure, I'll have another one. And come back up again. Mm. And then this time he's like holding it there and kind of rubbing a little bit. But I did have this shirt on.
What?
I described this shirt, Tom.
Flowery.
Yes.
Boisterous.
Yes.
Rambunctious. And
would you describe this shirt as masculine?
No.
As far from masculine as one might get without actually shopping in the woman's department?
Yeah, exactly. It's a potpourri of bad taste.
Thank you.
Right back.
Tom's gone to the movies. That's good news for you movie goers.
I have indeed. Yeah, I've been swamped, John. I've been seeing like two movies a day for three, 4 weeks. Because I've got to turn in my nominations for Best Supporting Actress and Best Cinematography and all that. So it's been a hellish couple of weeks.
Oh, my God.
But I do have a movie that's opening today that you can go see in theaters. And it's set way back in the 1860s. Back then, the science of meteorology was in its infancy, and many brave men and a few women risked their lives in hot air balloons to further the art of forecasting the weather. Now, this is relatively virgin territory for the movies, so I applaud filmmaker Tom Harper for zeroing in on such little-known escapades in the movie called The Aeronauts. What's inexplicable to me, however, is how he could take such fresh material and basically make it seem so stale so quickly. Now, the movie is based on, or at least inspired by, the real-life 1862 balloon expedition of an English scientist named James Glaisher, who sought to better understand the skies and at the same time wrest the altitude record away from those French. He sought funding from a very unsympathetic scientific community, however.
Gentlemen, to predict the weather could save hundreds of thousands of lives.
I ask for funding for my own expedition into the skies.
We are scientists, not fortune tellers.
And with that, they dismiss him. He feels nothing but rejection from his own community. So as a last resort, Glaisher turns to Amelia Wren, a well-to-do widow of a fellow balloonist and a pilot in her own right.
Miss Wren, I need to make studies of the air.
I'm not a coachman for hire.
You are the only person who could fly us higher than anyone has ever been.
Now, Ran, of course, because this is a movie, eventually comes around, and the two of them are soon off on their experimental balloon ride of their lives. Now, there's something of an odd couple. He's strictly by the book scientist. She's more of a daredevil show-off. But as the ride gets more and more harrowing, they have to learn to work together, or they'll both perish.
James, if you won't listen to me, listen to that.
Wait, not one of my readings suggested a storm.
Well, that's what it is. And we're inside a cumulo, which is precisely where we shouldn't be.
Don't worry. She's not made of conductive material, so we won't attract lightning.
And if we are struck, the gas will explode, so we won't live long enough for me to push up.
As the film's trailer shows, Amelia Wren performed some spectacular feats, at one point even scaling a now frozen balloon 30,000 feet above the ground. Imagine scaling a moving Mount Everest. Truth be known, Wren outperforms Glacier at just about every turn. What a great aspirational role model for girls everywhere. But as amazing as some of the dangers the two of them face are, there's not enough material to justify a nearly two-hour movie that's mostly set in a basket. The film's frequent breaks to luxuriate in the visual splendor of a hot air balloon flying high in the sky, those breaks kind of contribute to the sense that it's not just the air that is thin, but also the plot. But hey, at least we learned some history, right? Or maybe not. It turns out Amelia Wren is a completely made-up person. The role model for the ages is as fictional as Pippi Longstocking. Glacier did indeed have a pilot on his historic, record-breaking flight, and his name was Henry Coxwell, a man, I can only presume. Now, of course, movies shouldn't be required to be completely historically accurate. Poetic license serves an important aesthetic function. But to create a fake proto-feminist heroine and encourage us to revel in her exploits in a movie about a specific event in history seems like an unnecessary cheat. That balloon is not the only thing full of hot air. My solution? Turn it into a children's movie, fictionalize both characters, and use them as role models to teach kids about balloon flight and early weather forecasting. At least you'd have an honest movie.
Early weather forecasting.
That's right. They used to send up hot air balloons, John, and they set altitude records 38,000 feet in the air. They were freezing the balloon. It's like it was very dangerous a work, and I admire all the work they did, but to create a false impression that this woman did all these spectacular things when she's just made up, when the rest of the story is based in historical fact, I found insulting.
You were insulted by the movie.
I was, despite the fact that I liked the topic. It's like, who knew all this stuff was going on back then? So,
What do you do when you walk out of a movie where you've been insulted? You in a bad mood after that?
Well, I let it out in my reviews.
Okay.
I'm never in a bad mood too long.
Come right back. Let's see. I don't have the new sheet. Normally we get the update.
Yeah.
Let's tell you this. The know-it-all quiz is coming up.
Oh, my God. All five questions? Five questions. Count them.
Five?
There's five.
Five. Jacob has one.
Oh, good. I'm sure it'll be the best.